Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 369 for May 13th, 2012. Coming up in a few minutes.
He didn't look for the balance of the whiskey. He looked for the environmental factors of the surrounding area. That's very, very interesting to me, that he believes that the whiskey should be made by the nature, and I learned.
That's Suntory's Mike Miyamoto on Hakushu, which is finally available in the U.S. after only being exported to Europe and other regions for several years. Mike was the distillery manager at Hakushu and Yamazaki Distilleries. He's now Suntory's global ambassador, and he'll tell us about the late Michael Jackson's impact on Hakushu and answer some of your questions as well. I'll also have the calendar of events, the comments of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department.
Whiskey Cast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases, and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Lots of news on the bourbon front first. First of all, a U.S. appeals court has upheld Maker's Mark's trademark for its dripping red wax seal. The owners of Jose Cuervo Tequila and Diageo North America had appealed a lower court ruling against their use of a similar red wax seal on a limited edition Jose Cuervo bottling. The legal fight has been going on since 2003. Maker's Mark trademarked their wax seal back in 1985. And while the Cuervo expression is just one of many spirits with wax seals, Maker's Mark made it clear during the appeal that it will only enforce the trademark for red dripping wax seals. The Jose Cuervo expression that led to the lawsuit has been off the market since 2004. Another legendary name in Kentucky distilling history is back in business. The Pogue family has reopened its distillery in Maysville and will be producing small batches of Old Pogue bourbon. Their family has been distilling in Mason County since 1876, when H.E. Pogue left the old-time distillery to make his own whiskey. The Pogues sold the distillery after Prohibition ended. It closed after World War II. But the family has been selling Old Pogue bourbon made from one of their original recipes at an undisclosed Kentucky distillery for several years. It'll be a while before whiskey from the new distillery is available. They're making about a barrel a week right now. The Pogues joined the Willett family of Bardstown, which reopened the Willett Distillery earlier this year. Meanwhile, Buffalo Trace is releasing the fourth in its series of Colonel E.H. Taylor Jr. bourbons. The barrel-proof bourbon will be available in June. It's an uncut, unfiltered bourbon made with a rye mash bill, and it's bottled at 67.25% ABV. That's a whopping 134.5 proof. For history buffs, Colonel Taylor once owned what's now known as Buffalo Trace Distillery. One last bit of bourbon news. Chuck Cowdery has released his first e-book, and it focuses on the story of the legendary A.H. Hirsch Reserve Straight Bourbon. In fact, the title is The Best Bourbon You'll Never Taste. Also on the book front, Ian Buxton will be releasing the sequel to his book, 101 Whiskies to Try Before You Die, in July. It's called 100 World Whiskies to Try Before You Die. Dominic Rossgrove is upping the ante on that front. His new book will be released this week. It's called 1001 Whiskies You Must Taste Before You Die. All three are available in the Whiskey Cast bookstore, powered by Amazon.com. In other news, I mentioned several weeks ago that Crown Royal XR will be disappearing from retailers this year as supplies of the whiskey from the old Waterloo Distillery in Ontario run out. Now, the second expression in what's being called the Crown Royal Extra Rare Whiskey Series has been unveiled. It'll also carry the Crown Royal XR label with a different bottle design. Master blender Andrew McKay used some of the final whiskies produced at Montreal's LaSalle Distillery, which closed back in 1993. It'll be available starting in June. I'll have tasting notes for it on an upcoming episode of WhiskeyCast. Jura has released a new 21-year-old expression. It's based on the recent 200th anniversary release, which was also a 21-year-old bottling. It's available through the Jura website. Distillers in Speyside could use some rain. Actually, they could use a lot of rain these days. According to the Drinks Business magazine, Speyside has been facing its worst water shortage in 170 years. There wasn't a lot of snow over the winter. The dry spell this spring made things even worse. The magazine reports Glenfarclas had to cut production to 40% of capacity during February and March because of the lack of water. Diageo was in the middle of a PR nightmare. Last weekend, the British Institute of Innkeeping, which is a leading trade group for bar and pub owners in the UK, held its annual BII Scotland Awards in Glasgow. Diageo had signed on as the sponsor for the awards, but when the award for the Bar Operator of the Year was announced, the winner refused to accept the award. The reason? The award actually had BrewDog engraved on it, but the announced winner wasn't BrewDog. According to BrewDog's blog, BII officials admitted that they changed the winner after an unidentified Diageo executive threatened to pull the company's support from future BII events if BrewDog was honored. BrewDog was picked for the award by an independent panel of judges. In addition to making its own beers, BrewDog owns 7 pubs in Scotland and went public with the issue on social media as soon as they found out what had happened. On Wednesday, Diageo issued an apology and acknowledged what it called, quote, a serious misjudgment by Diageo staff, according to the Financial Times. This weekend, BII's chief executive told the BBC that the incident was a regrettable and isolated mistake and that a complete review will be done to make sure that future competitions will be done transparently. A sad note to report now. I've mentioned the series of charity auctions honoring Janet Sheed Roberts, the 110-year-old granddaughter of William Grant, the founder of William Grant & Sons. She passed away at her home on April 11th, at the time she was Scotland's oldest living woman. Meanwhile, the fourth of 11 bottles of Glenfiddich's 55-year-old Janet Sheed Roberts Reserve Single Malt has been auctioned off to raise money for the Lotus Flower Trust, which builds schools for disadvantaged children in India. World Duty Free was the high bidder at £42,000, or about $67,500. The four bottles auctioned off so far have raised about $309,000 for charities. In other auction news, McTeers held its most recent whiskey auction last week in Glasgow. With all of the hoopla over Queen Elizabeth's 60th anniversary on the throne this year, a bottle of the Macallan 25-year-old Silver Jubilee from 1977 sold for £3,000, or about $4,800. Runner-up honors went to two different Beaumores, a white Beaumore from 1964 brought £2,200, as did a rare bottle of Beaumore's Dynasty decanter from 1997. It was bottle number one out of a series of 850. The next McTeers auction is set for June 6th in Glasgow. The folks at Australia's Lark Distillery are celebrating their 20th anniversary this month. Bill and Lynn Lark started their distillery in Tasmania back in 1992, with the first distilling license issued in Tasmania in about 153 years. Here's how they're marking the anniversary. Last year, they signed a deal with the Seppeltsfeld Winery to get access to Seppeltsfeld's rare port casks, and they're being allowed to use a rare cask that held 133-year-old port wine at one time. They've filled that cask with samples of the 150 different whiskies that they've made over the last 20 years. It'll be released later this year. Also in Australia, if you think you're a good judge of whiskies, there's still time to enter this year's Australian Malt Whiskey Tasting Championship. It'll be held at the Australian Museum in Sydney on June 15th. Competitors will try to identify 8 different whiskies in a blind tasting. The competition is held every other year. This year's winner gets 2 spots on the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society Australian Chapter's Whiskey and Wine Trip to Tasmania later this year. Finally, just a quick shout-out to what could be New Jersey's first whiskey distillery, just down the road from here in Haddonfield. Cooper River Distillers is in Camden, just a few blocks from the Delaware River. and plans to start distilling rum at first, then at least two different types of whiskeys. The only problem, they're still waiting for a license from the state of New Jersey before they can start distilling. Let's hope the red tape gets cut quickly. And that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Visit us on the web at glenmorangie.com or download our iPad app at the iTunes App Store. Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well made.
Let's check the inbox now for the comments of the week, brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. Got this email from Deval Gandhi the other day. Mark, hope you're doing well. First of all, let me say that I thoroughly enjoy listening to WhiskeyCast. It's something I look forward to every week. I would like to know a quick way to find out the total number of bottles released in a particular series or release. For example, if I want to find out how many bottles were released by Glenfiddich in their Age of Discovery Madeira Cask Finish series. Is there a website where you could get reliable information, specifically the number of bottles released, of all the new releases? Hope to hear from you soon. Best, Deval. Well, I got right back to him, and here's what I told him, that that's a website a lot of whiskey lovers would love to see, but it'll probably never happen. Some whiskey makers are very upfront about the number of bottles in a series, but others treat it as a trade secret, and they never quite say for sure. If I do have that information when I'm reporting on a new release, I try to include it here on WhiskeyCast. Now, some folks seem to have a lot of free time on their hands. Take Josh Scott in Indiana, for instance. Here's what he posted on Facebook this weekend. Just when I think I'm pulling closer in the Josh Scott versus Christopher Winters WhiskeyCast mentions race in episode 349, Chris gets a mention 10 seconds after me. I'm teasing, of course. Thanks for the mention, Mark. Almost through the entire archives. Well, first of all, I didn't know there was a competition going on, but Josh is now a bit closer to Chris. I'm kidding, of course, but if you'd like to join the competition, you can always post something you'd like to share on our Facebook page, or you can always email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and the comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker on the web at johnnywalker.com. Click the banner at the WhiskeyCast website to become a Whiskey Insider today.
WhiskeyCast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. In 1886, William Grant set out to fulfill a lifelong ambition, to make the best dram in the valley. Today, a rarity in Scotland, Glenfiddich still remains independently owned by the fifth generation of the same pioneering family. This unique legacy of skill, passion and pride forges a long-term commitment to creating truly great single malt without compromise. Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To learn more about our award-winning range and join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
Let's check the calendar of events now, brought to you by Laphroaig. Lots going on over the next few weeks. Jolly Topper tastings in Edinburgh, Scotland at the Kilderkin on the 18th and the Tollbooth Tavern on the 21st. The Brandy Library in New York City has a bunch of spirit school classes coming up over the next few weeks, starting with a Scotch class on May 25th. Bonhams will hold its next auction of rare whiskies on May 23rd in Hong Kong. Whiskey Live Singapore is May 21st, Whiskey Live Dublin on May 26th, and Whiskey Live Australia is June 6th in Melbourne. I get a lot of requests for information on tastings in the Phoenix area, and there's a Glenfiddich tasting May 30th at the Sanctuary Camelback Mountain Resort in Paradise Valley. Of course, the Isla Festival of Malt and Music runs from May 25th through June 3rd. There are many more events going on all over the world over the next few weeks, and I've also added a bunch of new events scheduled for later on this year to the calendar at the WhiskeyCast website. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Michael Power, Stock Controller, Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey.
I've been working in Middleton Distillery for the last 28 years. My job base is to organise deliveries of the cereals that are used to make Redbreast. Also, I have to be very mindful of the quality of the cereals coming in, such as the barley and the malt, which are specifically used for Redbreast. We're very mindful of the continuity of supply and the continuity of quality, and we use grain suppliers from the Munster area, which is one of the best growing areas for barley in Ireland. I have been dealing with basically the same people, such as Henry Goods and Pat Den, who have been supplying us with barley. It's usually spring barley going back all those years. Over the years, I've grown to like Redbreast more and more. It's because it's like the distillery itself. Something has developed with me. When you've tasted other whiskies, you learn to drink whiskey, and then later on, when you want more complexity or you want something more from a whiskey, tend to go to whiskies like Redbreast. Redbreast is unique because of the way it's made in the traditional way. The pot stills would have been the traditional way to make Irish whiskey.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know, know Redbreast.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you this week by Jura. Japanese whiskies have been in high demand for the last decade or so, and hard to find in many parts of the world. That's because most of Japan's whiskies aren't exported outside the country. For instance, Suntory has only sent a small amount of its Hakushu single malt to Europe in the past. Until a few months ago, it was never available in the U.S. That has changed now. Mike Miyamoto was the manager at both Hakushu and Yamazaki distilleries. He's now Suntory's global brand ambassador. We talked over lunch the other day in Philadelphia. First of all, let's talk about the debut of Hakushu in North America, because this is the sister distillery to Yamazaki. It has been exported, and folks in Europe, whiskey lovers in Europe, obviously know about it. It's been there, available there for many years, but for Americans who are just now getting a first look at Hakushu, tell me about the whiskey and also the distillery.
Well, Hakushu is the second distillery of Suntory, and which is formed back in 1973, and which is surrounded by the nice, beautiful mountains and the forests. That's why Hakushu gets the nice flavor of the forest and also green leaves and, you know, all sorts of beautiful plants. And also the water of Hakushu is different from Yamazaki. Particularly water actually filtrated through the granite rocks of the Southern Alps, and that gives the purified water. It's very, very clean. That's why the Hakushu tastes very refreshing and also clean and crispy and very, very nice flavor. And also the hint of smokiness gives you the sort of outdoor feeling. So the Hakushu is suit for sort of a drink and maybe over the weekend at the sunshine and maybe through the leaves and those trees. And so it's enjoyable with the soda as well.
Let's talk about the taste differences between Yamazaki and Hakushu. You're the expert on this. I know I've tasted both of them, and there are definite differences. What are the differences in the taste between the two whiskeys, and how much of this is attributable to the distillery character and how much of it to the barrel choices you make and the barley choices you make during the process?
Well, Yamazaki, as you know, that is the sort of a signatory single malt by Suntory, and also representing maybe Japanese single malt anyway. And then the Yamazaki consists of three different component whiskies, mostly, Punchons, which is made of American oak from the scratch, then also sherry butt. Then most interestingly, that the Yamazaki's got the Mizunara, Japanese oak whiskey, which is very significant to Yamazaki. And in contrast with Yamazaki, Hakushu is don't have any Mizunara character in it, but still have a very nice American oak type of wood, and also the hint of sherry as well. And I think the most different thing both Yamazaki and Hakushu is the water. The Yamazaki water is soft water, but more like towards the hard, maybe containing more minerals compared to Hakushu. So Yamazaki's got a little bit body compared to Hakushu. Hakushu's more refreshing.
Which is more popular in Japan, Yamazaki or Hakushu?
Well, when we launched the Yamazaki, that was 1984, then Hakushu was followed 10 years later. That's why I think still Yamazaki is more popular than Hakushu, but Hakushu has been picking up on very, very fast in the last 2 years or so. So it won't be long before that Hakushu catching up on Yamazaki.
I want you to tell me the story that you told us over lunch today about Michael Jackson's visit to Hakushu, because it really sort of illustrates not only the way he viewed whiskeys and the way he taught us to view whiskeys, but also how he discovered the distillery's own character about what makes Hakushu unique.
Well, when I was the head of Hakushu Distillery, Michael Jackson, and you know, we were good friends at the time, and he just visited me and for 2 days. First day, he didn't go into the distillery at all, and he requested that he would like to see the surrounding area of Hakushu Distillery. So I took him around, and then he just questioned me, what's that color of the tree? And, you know, and at that time, it was fall, so leaves changing the colors. So he just questioned me the type of the trees and type of the leaves and everything. And I couldn't answer all those questions because I'm not expert on the plants. But anyway, then second day, he came back to the distillery. Finally, he agreed to look around the distillery inside. Then I showed him a lot of different samples of whiskeys and from the new distillate, 3, 5, 8, 10, and maybe 18 years. But he just shook off his head and didn't make any comments of our whiskey. And he says, okay, I'm going home. And that was very difficult for me. I needed his comments. So he stayed overnight that day. So I just asked him to come back early in the morning and the third day, and he did. Then I decided to show him the, you know, 30-year-old whiskey, which is not good as far as I'm concerned in terms of the balance and quality, because that is the whiskey which is made in the early days of Hakushu. That's why that was not the good balance. But as soon as Michael Jackson knows that the whiskey, he said, it's big and outdoors. This is the one that I've been looking for. So then he just went back to all the other samples from the old and going down to the younger ones. He said, definitely there is this typical harp type of note in there. And so that's it. He said, this is really good. And the Hakushu is really surrounded by the forest. And that smell really goes into the whiskey. And I was amazed. Michael Jackson, I learned a lot from him. He just believed that the whiskey should be made from the environment. Yes, I learned a lot.
Did that affect the decision on which whiskeys to release? Because you had thought that whiskey that he really liked wasn't a very good one, and he came back and said, no, this is a really good whiskey.
Yes, I was really amazed. And, you know, he didn't look for the balance of the whiskey. He looked for the environmental factors of the surrounding area. You know, that's very, very interesting to me, that he believes that the whiskey should be made by the nature. And I learned, yes. And as far as he's concerned, that the whiskey I just presented wasn't that bad whiskey at all. But to me, it was a bad whiskey, but I have to change my mind since then.
And did you change it?
Yes, I learned a lot, and also I still believe that whiskey should be made by the nature, and the distillery has to have its own character because of the surrounding area.
Does the Hakushu 12 that we tasted today reflect that character that he found in the whiskey?
Well, yes, indeed. Actually, Dave Broom came back to see me, 4 years ago or so, and I took him around the Hakushu distillery, and Dave Broom said that, all the Hakushu whiskey has the minty flavor, which is the same as, Michael Jackson described. So still, Hakushu's got a nice and, you know, atmosphere. Yeah.
Now, you had a Hakushu sherry cask released that sold out very quickly this spring in Japan, and we had the chance to taste it today, and I picked up that mintiness despite the heavy sherry character. How hard was it to balance the distillery character with those sherry casks that can often overpower some whiskies?
Well, sherry cask actually overwhelms the, you know, whiskey itself, and any whiskey matured in the sherry cask gives you just a sherry type in the flavor. But having said that, Hakushu sherry seems to be very much refreshing, still maintaining the, you know, the Hakushu character. That's amazing. I really don't know why, but still I think the environment does that trick.
Now, you recently also released, at least in Japan only, no-age statement versions, or what's being called multi-year versions, of both Hakushu and Yamazaki whiskies. What went into that decision?
Well, you know, I mean, we believe in the quality of the whiskey shouldn't be dictated by the age. A lot of people believe that the older the whiskey goes, the better the quality should be. Yes, in a sense it's true, but there are lots of difference in, you know, in terms of age statement. You know, the same, you know, whiskey which is aged 12 years old, okay, the same whiskey and a different cask, then just gives you the different taste. And the even younger one, it's got a very nice flavor and balance. And we are restricted by the age. So although we like to release that whiskey to the our single malt, but if it says 12, and we have to wait 12 years to come. But actually, whiskey may get deteriorated when it's 12 years old. So we thought that then why don't we just use, you know, whatever the whiskey at the highest peak, okay, should be used, okay? So that's why we introduced this new system. So although it's not 12 years old, but still containing lots of 12 years old anyway, but then maybe having a much younger one, but quality is there at the highest peak. So the blender always makes sure that. That's why instead of just giving you the just 12 years old and over, we like to just give the audience a lot of variety of the whiskey, which is very good and satisfactory as well.
Will this be exported at some point, or will it stay in Japan only?
Well, stay in Japan for the time being, and a lot of people still believe in the age statement. I don't know how our new product would be successful, how much successful it would be even in Japan. If it's successful, we may think of exporting a non-age statement to the United States as well.
What about other parts of the world, perhaps? Europe, Canada?
Well, maybe possible, yeah. But it depends on how it goes in Japan.
Now, you may not be ready to tell me yet, but I know every year you do a couple of special whiskeys that generally come out at some point during the year. What are you working on for 2012 that we can expect to see over the next few months?
Well, I can't disclose anything in front of you, and even if I know something about it. That's the only thing that I can tell you about and a new release, and is that we have a lot of different whiskeys in our stock. That's all I can tell. So you may be surprised when we introduce something new, but I can't tell you exactly what it is. Well, Mizunara wasn't discovered up until maybe 20, 30 years ago. Because Mizunara cask require, Mizunara whiskey required long age, you know, maturation. But once Mizunara, even the small portion of Mizunara gives the distinctive flavor. But that distinctive flavor is not really characteristic. It's very difficult to describe how it is. I know you, Mark, and you notice that. It's a kind of Japanese incense and kind of, you know, sandalwood taste and, you know, maybe a little bit cinnamon-like or ginger-like. But it's not that, but still subtle. But that subtlety and, you know, really, really gives the effect to the blend of Hibiki and also single malt Yamazaki.
The next question, talking about sandalwood, comes from Graham McKinney in Canada. And he said, Mark, I've read for years about Japanese distilleries taking wood experimentation to some extremes for maturation and finishing with cedar, sandalwood, etc. And he wants to know if you would comment on that and when, where, or if they could ever find that sort of whiskey on a shelf. He says, thanks, we love Suntory's product and would love to get more of it here in Canada. So can you sort of go into some of what you've done as far as more extremes in maturation and finishing techniques using some of the more exotic woods that aren't used in other parts of the world?
We have lots of experiments in our system. But we do that sort of experiment because we like to explore the possibility of the whiskey maturation. But having said that, we don't want to just confuse the people by introducing a lot of different expressions on the whiskeys and matured in different casks, whatever have you. Although the people are curious about it, but we don't want to just sell the whiskey to the people who are curious about it. So we have lots of different expressions in our stock, but we are not going to release it like that. And we would like to use the part of our whiskey as a finished product.
And you tend to use those experiments, say, in blends or in some of the other whiskeys and work those into other whiskeys instead of releasing them on their own?
That's right. Although we don't say anything about those whiskeys and in our blend, but some blends got the, cedar tree finished whiskey as well, but we don't disclose it. So, people may not notice it, but we use it anyway. But we don't sell it. We don't say it. We just be quiet about it.
Our next question comes from Christopher Winters in Indianapolis, and he wants to know why you don't use cork on many of your bottles. I know of the whiskeys we tasted today, only the Hibiki 12 has a cork stopper in it. He says, why do they not use cork? I applaud them for that, but am curious. I just had a Hakushu 12 that my friend brought me from Tokyo duty-free. So why don't you use cork for most bottlings?
Well, I know that there is a lot of argument about capping and over whiskey, and I know that. And the problems we have from cork is the inconsistency. The natural cork gives you the porous, so it leaks. Some of the cork and actually leaks, and that is the biggest problems in the industry. And Japanese people are so fussed about the completeness of the bottling, and even cork, it's a natural substance. Still, Japanese consumer complained about the leak. So instead of having that sort of possibility to leak the whiskey through the cap, and then we just use the capping, 100% sure that the whiskey wouldn't leak at all. That's the purpose of using the cap instead of cork. And also the cork has got the also giving the tend to give the sort of how to say how to, unwanted flavor as well. That's why it's very difficult. You see that some of the wines, is kind of deteriorated by the cork, so that some bottle has to be destroyed like that. That's why we prefer to have a consistency instead of the look.
But you use the cork on the Hibiki 12, which comes in a more decanter style bottle. Why is that?
Well, it's a designer's decision to use the cork, and we oppose to it. We, as a production person, we oppose to using the cork, but the designer insisted that we should have a cork. And so the cork we use for Hibiki is compressed one, not the natural one. natural one is, you know, once natural one we have, then we just actually tear them off and, you know, crush them down and then put them together compressed. That's the cork we use, so it's not a natural one. It's very difficult, and also, you know, it doesn't look good.
Our final question comes from Pierre Weidert in Switzerland, and his question is, he would be interested to know whether there are plans to make Hakushu 10-year-old available in Europe. I brought a bottle home from a recent trip to Japan and think that it's a fine whiskey with flavors quite different from the 12. Thanks for inquiring. Greetings from Switzerland, Pierre. Now, I think I've seen Hakushu 10, at least in some parts of Europe. I remember seeing it perhaps at Whiskey Life Paris in recent years, but is Hakushu 10 generally available outside of Japan?
Well, it was available, but we think and we are planning to actually fade out of Hakushu 10 because it's too close from 12. Okay, we like to concentrate on Hakushu 12 and Yamazaki 12. That's the main reason why we just fading out on Hakushu 10.
So Pierre would be well advised, if he likes Hakushu 10, to buy up as many bottles as he can find, if he can find it?
Well, there are some Hakushu 10 available and at the store, so he has to be fast and, you know, quick to grab them.
Any other product line changes we should know about?
No. 10 years old, we are going to actually fade out, and that's all. That's all. And hopefully, maybe a multi, you know, age and non-age statement of Hakushu and Yamazaki can be available in Europe and the United States. It depends on how it goes in Japanese market.
This week's WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Jura. Visit the Jura website at isleofjura.com and learn how you could win a bottle of Jura Superstition Single Malt. You'll find my tasting notes for the Hakushu 12 and 18-year-old single malts on the WhiskeyCast website and in our smartphone apps, too. But you see, Mike had a little something special hidden away for dessert. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you this week by Bal Blair. And that something special was a limited edition Hakushu sherry cask release that was available briefly in Japan this year before it sold out in just a few weeks. It was bottled at 48% ABV, the nose warm and inviting with notes of ginger root, honey, dried fruits, plums, and what might seem like a contradiction, grilled salmon and roast beef au jus. The taste fruity and thick, a nice acidic tartness, a hint of lemon, black cherries, brown sugar, and cooked berries too. The finish is long, dry, and slightly tart with touches of ginger root and roasted almonds. It's an outstanding whiskey. I'm scoring the Hakushu Sherry Cask a 95. Meanwhile, Hanky Bannister Original is one of Scotland's more popular blended scotches. Bottled at 43% ABV, the nose on my sample was aromatic with notes of honey, caramel, marzipan, and a nice maltiness with hints of dried fruits. The taste has a good mix of honey and spice with touches of cinnamon and ginger. The finish is short with a subtle touch of cinnamon spiciness. Overall, very well balanced and smooth. I'm scoring Hanky Bannister Original an 87. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you by Bal Blair, whiskey's timed to perfection. You'll find my tasting notes in the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android, and at the WhiskeyCast website, too. That's also where you'll find links for our Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, the photo gallery and print shop, WhiskeyCast HD videos, and our monthly WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings podcast, and, of course, a complete archive of past episodes, too. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. My email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases, and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2012, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.